When natural disaster strikes, the evidence shows that pet owners are at greater risk. Whether it's fire or flood, if you have a beloved cat or dog, you are less likely to evacuate, or certainly slower to evacuate. And if you do evacuate the family, you're more likely to return home to try and find your pet. What if this risk factor, though, could actually be turned into a protective factor? That is, leverage your desire to save your animals into an incentive to better prepare for emergencies. This intriguing question is posed by Dr. Kiralee Thompson, a cultural anthropologist with Central Queensland University, who also happens to be one of the young scientists just selected as the top five under 40. That's a joint project between RN and the University of New South Wales. Kiralee was selected from nearly 250 outstanding young scientific researchers. Kiralee Thompson joins us. Congratulations, Kiralee, and welcome to RN Breakfast.
Oh, thank you so much, Fran.
I expect to be hearing a lot more of you over the network in the coming year or so.
I hope so.
Kiralee, let's go to your research. Why is having a pet a risk factor during natural disasters?
Well, people have attachments to their pets that are just as strong as they might have for a child or a friend or an elderly parent. So people are desperate to save their animals with them, especially if they evacuate. However, people haven't often thought about what it takes to evacuate with a pet, what equipment they need, and how to actually catch a pet during a time of disaster.
So I can get why it would slow you down if you're trying to hunt for the cat that might have fled and hid in the garden shed or something. But if it's the cat's there or the dog's there, my dog never more than 2 feet behind me at the moment. When you jump in the car with the family to evacuate, you grab the cat, you grab the dog. It's no particular slowdown. So it's only if the animals are scattered, is that right?
Yeah, it's if the animals are scattered. There is some research from the US which says that people that don't have enough cat carriers are at a greater risk of not evacuating. And you might think it's easy to just grab a cat and chuck it in the car, but people can't really think through, well, of course, unless you've experienced a disaster yourself, you just can't think through what the conditions might be at the time. It might be night, the sky might be covered with smoke if it's during the day, the animals themselves might be panicked, or you might have children that are playing outside if you've got short notice and be more concerned about them. And then find that your children are reluctant to get into the car, for example, because they want to go back for their pet.
And then, of course, not all pets are, you know, car friendly. Some are very large animals like horses or, you know, livestock, which, you know, would pose an even bigger difficulty, I guess.
Horses are a real issue because you can't, generally, unless you've got a tiny pony, you can't squeeze more into a horse float. Than the float is designed for. And a lot of people own more than two horses, but might not even have a float. Or if they do, can only fit two in there. They might have a horse that actually doesn't travel well and takes a long time to get into the float. The float might have flat tyres. We found in some research from WA, people went to evacuate and they just didn't have their equipment prepared. And then, of course, there are people who keep their horses on other people's properties, and we call that adjustment in Australia. So someone might be living in one suburb, find out that there's a fire in the area where they keep their horse, and then there's a whole influx of people driving into a fire-threatened community to collect horses. And that's not really too different from someone who might be working in the city, find out their property's under threat and want to go back for their dog or cat.
That's right. So we're speaking with Dr. Kiralee Thompson. She's a cultural anthropologist looking at this issue of our instincts when it comes to, say, a bushfire approaching and how we save our animals or our drive to save our animals. You tried to switch this on your head because, particularly if we think about the larger animals, if you think ahead and you're preparing for how do I keep my animals safe, that's going to bring you to talking about how I better prepare for an approaching bushfire. Is that right?
That's right. And that's the whole crux of this research project, is that by encouraging people to think about what they would do to save their pets, we can get people to be better prepared themselves. So getting people to think about evacuating the day before a catastrophic forecast means that people are out of the area, they're safe, they're not putting pressure on emergency services, neither are they putting pressure on rescue shelters if they've already arranged somewhere to go.
And also, I don't know how closely you've looked at this, how have you gone about studying this?
Well, we've done we've gotten at this research problem from a lot of different angles. One is that I have analysed a lot of transcripts that have been collected by the Bushfire Natural Hazards CRC, and they include interviews done in what are called task forces. There's been 11 around Australia now. I led two of them in I led three of them in South Australia to look at fires that we had in 2014. So we've got interviews with around 500 people that we've looked at, and we've spoken to people about how their animals affected their behaviour at the time of a real bushfire threat. Mm-hmm. So we've talked to people that way. We're currently designing an online survey to go out nationally, and that will talk to people who have and who haven't lived through a bushfire event or even a flood event.
And beyond getting you prepared in terms of getting ready to go early, so getting organised and getting the animals down the hill, etc., did you also find that it could help people prepare the area around there to fireproof, if you like, their property a bit, because they might be thinking about, okay, I'll bring the horses in or I'll bring the whatever in and keep them close to the house. We better clear the area around the house to give us more space. Was this something that was factored in?
Yeah, most definitely, especially with horses. A lot of people will keep bear paddocks around the property for them during summer so that the grass is kept short. But we want to look at this from a really comprehensive perspective. So if people would, people with horses, for example, they might want to contact their local brigades and ask the firefighters to come to their property and learn how to handle their horses. We want people with dogs to get them more familiar with being handled by strangers, so that if someone does need to come to the house and rescue them or them and their pets, or come and feed their pet if they've had to evacuate and leave them behind, we want those animals to be friendly enough for people to handle them safely.
Mm. It's good research, Kirrily. Thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you so much.
And again, congratulations, and we do look forward to hearing more of you here on RN.
Thank you, Fran.
Dr. Kirrily Thompson, a senior researcher and cultural anthropologist with Central Queensland University and one of RN's now top five under 40-year-old scientists. So she will be featured, her and her research and her findings, along with the others, on programs across our network, we hope, over the coming year.